Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Is it just you, Hannah?
Yes, but I just got on myself. I had company, and I don't know, 6:30 is the time. The grandchildren want to call, and the sons want to come visit. That's where it goes.
Good evening, Malcolm. I do understand, Tom. We'll begin with Pasuk 280 in section 27 of the Sulam commentary on Parasha Lech Lecha from the Zohar. And we'll start with L'Shem Yehu. L'Shem Yehu, Kutcha Barifu, Ishkinte, Yitzilu, Urhimu, Urhilu, Urhilu, Urhilu. Le'akta, L'Shem, Yudhe, Bavavhe, Be'yichuda, Shalim, B'Shem, Kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, lasok Torah mitzvah. Vayino amam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei adenu kanenei aleinu maasei adenu kanenehu. Achar hadvarim haele wikomer, ilein titkamei oraita. Tiktiv ech hadvarim. Aile diber Hashem el kol kehalchem. Malhalan pitgame oraita ofata. Pitgame oraita batar. Beishta dal barnash. Behai alma badbarim. Aile kudsha barichu. Vaser leya piatim lav lenishmata shalom haidiki altira avram anochi magen la mikol zainin bishin dekeinom. After these things, these are the words of Torah, just as these words Hashem spoke to all your assembly are the words of Torah. The meaning of the verse is that after a person has been occupied in this world with these things, with literally Devar words, then the Holy One, blessed be He, prepares good tidings for the soul and welcomes it, as it is written. Fear not, Avram, I am your shield. I shall shield you from all the evil aspects in Gehinnom. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. There is a hint to a spiritual law in this pasuk. The Hebrew word for word or thing is also translated as thing, and it has other meanings as well. Some tikkunim deal with words, as in saying words of Torah. Other tikkunim deal with the things of life, meaning raising mundane things to a level of holiness. Questions, thoughts, comments.
Is this hinting that as one becomes involved with the words of Torah, that what Hashem told Abram would apply to every soul?
Yes, it applies to every soul.
Mm-hmm.
The words that are spoken to Abram are applied to every soul. And the words that are spoken to Abraham applies to the children of Israel souls.
So the difference in his name makes a difference.
The name does make a difference, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But don't remember, the name is a picture, a connection to the soul. by analyzing the name, you analyze the potentials in the name, in the soul.
What are the things in Gehenna? He would protect him from the things in Gehenna.
The word Daber translates as words, it translates as things. So what do we mean when we say the word thing? It also means something. It also translates as anything. These are English words that are included in the Hebrew word daber. Now, if you look at the meaning of those three letters in sequence or in looking at the order of it, the Dalet is a doorway. The Bet is a house and a blessing. The Resh is both the energy of lack, but it's also the energy of the head. And the head represents the beginning. So one way of translating thing or daber is the doorway to the blessings of the intellect, the head. A very deep way of translating it is the doorway to the blessings of the lack. Because being in lack is a blessing. Being in pain is a blessing. We don't understand that because we're feeling the body consciousness that feels the pain. The soul feels the pain, but not in this world. Souls feel a pain in Gehinnom. And that is the idea of the protection of the things in Gehinnom. There are there's seven levels of Gehinnom. One of them is heat, that everybody thinks hell is based on the fires. But another one is the cold, frozen water. Being too cold is also a way of cleansing in Gehinnom, depending on what people did. We know people who are cold to others. They experience in Gehinnom that cold. The way they treated others is the way they are being treated. But all of that is protected. Avram is protected because of his connection to the Torah, his connection to Hashem. So what does the protection look like? He reincarnates. He doesn't have to go to Gehinnom. But even within Gehinnom, there are protections based on the study of Torah. We will study that as we continue to the advanced reincarnation classes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I just did with the three letters of Daber, you can do with your name, and you can do with every word in the Hebrew lexicon. By taking it down to its level of the letters, and then understanding how those letters unify into the word. It's a wonderful, wonderful study to do that. you truly reveal a lot of light. And you will feel that light. Thinking, or should I go on?
Oh,
I think you can go on.
Verse 281. Sakar ha har bay beod begin de call man de ishtadal beoraita the high alma. Zakevi achsi, Yeruta achsanta, Bialma diate, Kimadiktiv lechan chil, O Havai, Yesh, my Yesh, Dalma diate, Weotrote, Amale, Behai Alma, Meot Chara, Umi Kol Tivu, the Alma Man, the Azel, the Amina Zake, the Alma, the Ate Uman, the Azel, the Smala, Ha Otra, the Alma Dane. The translation, and your reward shall be exceedingly great, because whoever studies Torah in this world shall merit and inherit a place in the world that is coming. As it is written, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance. What is substance? Substance is the world that is coming. And I will fill their treasures in this world by riches and all goodness of the world. He who goes to the right shall merit a place in the world that is coming, and he who goes to the left shall merit the riches of this world. Questions, comments, thoughts. This pasuk is clear as written. What is the meaning of going to the right or going to the left? Questions, comments, thoughts.
That was going to be my question. Does right mean hessen? You know, does left mean gavur? Or right column, left column? Or is it another frame of reference? I'm trying to think of what right and left could be.
The answer is yes, it means going to the to Chesed or going to Gevura. But it also has other frames of reference. There's other meanings to the words. But the typical understanding to the students of Kabbalah is you're going to go to the concept of the columns or the concepts of the Sefirot.
Okay.
But it's really to look at what the effect of going to the left is. The riches of this world.
Okay.
Now, what does the riches of this world mean? You have a roof over your head, you have food on your table, or that you have greater riches than you do need, and that you learn to share with those extra riches. What does it mean? What does it mean to stay with the words of Torah? You're not promised riches of this world, you're promised riches in the world that is coming. And this is, where do you find the balance? in this pasuk. And that's really a should be one of the part of the commentary. It asks that question, where do you find the balance between left and right, between the riches of the physical world and the promise of the spiritual world? Is it okay to be a poor person that you depend on other people to support your physical needs in this world? Is that okay? That's essentially the conflict that's taking place right now in the argument over Netanyahu's inability to form his coalition, because the only party that's left that could agree to him, because it considers itself a right-wing organization, that organization is saying you have to draft the religious, the yeshiva students. They can't just stay in and study Torah, whereas the other religious organizations, which are part of the Netanyahu coalition, say, if you do that, I'm not part of this. I won't support you. And that's why they're talking about having an early election, which means another election in about 90 days. But it's the same. It's literally the issue. If I study Torah, the Torah will protect me. If I study Torah, the Torah will provide my food and shelter. But on a practical, physical level, that means that some other part of the society has to support the family, the religious family. And the religious family has many, many children. So now you get into the area of, in our generation, where you can choose to be pregnant or not, you get into this whole idea. So it's not an easy solution. Politically, the Torah tells you to be fruitful and multiply, and that's what the religious right is doing. The religious left is doing it as well. Oh, there's a religious left? Of course there is. There are people with different character traits, different attributes, all built into the study of their name. But the world that says, I'm right and the other one is wrong, will never find peace. The world that says, I'm right and you are also right, will find the solution to these issues that I'm talking about.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I thought back, and when they left Egypt, the Israelites left Egypt, that all men of the age of 20 to 50, I believe, had to serve in the battles. Correct?
No.
Is that not
no.
correct? Okay.
20 to 50 is the age of the Levites serving in the temple.
Okay. So did all men, okay, the next question is, did all the men joined in the battles against their enemies in the wilderness? They went out and fought just like Joshua, you know, Abraham with the four kings, so forth and so on. What was the Torah standings on fighting for the nation?
I think it's in Numbers. One of the parasha has this idea that before the army goes to war, there's a Kohen, a priest, who announces to the people in the army the conditions of going to war. Like, you don't go to war if it's the first year of your marriage.
Right.
And there's other, all of that is expressed in that parasha, all in one place. So the basic understanding is the people in the army of that generation in the desert were all righteous. They were all tzaddikim. Because if they weren't tzaddikim, if they weren't righteous, they had ways of getting out of serving, out of this war. They didn't have to. So they only were choosing to go to war in order to protect the nation, and that made them righteous.
So there was no set age, per se.
There was a minimum age of, the counting was from 20 and up. So the minimum age was 20.
Okay. Now let's go back to where we began.
Okay.
So we were discussing about the election, possibly in 90 days, about the ones that wanted to study Torah and not serve in the army.
The law says that every person, male or female, who reaches the age of 18, either serves in the army or they serve in community service like hospital work or other forms of community service. But they are all participating and supporting the society for 2 years. That's in the modern state of Israel.
That's the law today.
And that's the law, except there's an exemption negotiated by the religious right that says that they don't have to serve. If they're studying Torah in the yeshiva, they don't have to go to the army, and they don't have to serve in other areas of the community. The studying Torah is counted as community service.
Okay. So there's two different protections for the state of Israel at this point. The one that go out in battle or secure the safety of the peoples. The other
right.
ones say we are doing the other part, or left, right, whichever, say we are doing the same duties, but by studying Torah, we are also protecting the nation by studying Torah because it is a protection shield.
That's correct.
So there lies the battle. They're both doing the same service, but in different ways.
The argument is that the secular Israeli says, my tax dollars is supporting you to study, and I don't see the benefit of studying Torah. My tax dollars is supporting you to study, but you're not providing for your children, and you're having so many children, and you're creating this society where your children aren't going to, they're not being trained for work after the yeshiva. They're told only study Torah. They're not told in the yeshivas, they don't study any secular subjects. So they're not being trained to be a to run a computer and so forth. The
okay.
religious community said, if I study Torah, I learn all these things that I will need. And everything is going to be covered and taken care of by God. This is a longer conversation, Malka, because we're out of time. But go ahead quickly.
So are they in the studies at all times throughout their whole life, or is there a certain age that they're no longer in the yeshivas?
No, they can study in the yeshiva as long as they can, as long as the yeshiva says that they're able to study. And that's part of the argument and discussion as well.
So the tax dollars are paying for their attendance at these yeshivas.
Correct. And typically what takes place in coalition building is the negotiation over what how much the government is going to pay the yeshivas to study, and that money goes to the head of the yeshiva, and he decides how much he's going to pay each student. And so you get into all kinds of discussions over that issue. And every time there's an election, there's a negotiation as to how much will the government be subsidizing the yeshivas. And the secular society is saying, wait a second, you know, right now there's, you know, 15% studying in the yeshivas, but it's been growing. And at some point, it's got to, you know, it's too much for the society to support. And this has been going on for 2,000 years throughout the discussions of the sages. The Rambam says you need to train your children both in Torah and in secular knowledge. And others of the sages say, no, you just need to study Torah and God will provide. One of those was Rabbi Shimon in the Zohar. And you know the midrash about how he came out of the cave after 12 years and he saw somebody working the land doing mundane tasks and he destroyed the person. And God said, don't destroy my world, go back into the cave. And he went back for another year, and then when he came out, he could allow the secular world to exist. Because he came to understand that difference. But that conflict's been going on for 3,000 years, 2,500 years. And it really is always relative to the souls involved.
Well, the Torah also says that they had to work the land as well, right?
No, you don't have to work the land. The land will grow on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where you get people telling you 100 years ago that we're going to run out of food and the population's getting too big. And it's been that's been going on for, you know, thousands of years as well. We won't have enough food because the land won't support, the crops won't support the people. But then the technology has been developed and there's the land is sufficient to support the two people.
Right.
But if you till the land, if you work the land, you get a greater production of food.
Mm-hmm.
But will God not provide food for people if they didn't work the land and they studied Torah?
Oh, absolutely. He provides for all. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. But then in the Middle Ages, when they were in the ghettos in Europe, what was the society like? The men studied, and the women worked in the shops and supported the men. And so the father-in-law, who didn't stay in school but somehow started a business, he would support his son-in-law. That was part of the dowry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not giving you answers to these questions. I'm just raising the questions. But I do have to go.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
We will have the class on the Ari tonight. Shalom to all.
Shalom.